Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat serving New York's 28th District, first elected to the New York State Senate in a special election in February 2002. Liz Krueger is currently the ranking, that means the top Democratic member of Senate Finance Committee. She's also a member of five other committees: elections, higher education, housing, construction and community development, mental health and developmental disabilities, and rules.
Wow. And codes. I just got an extra committee added.
Well, I'm so delighted. How do you have time to do anything else?
I actually don't, Alan. That's the problem.
How do you have time to brush your teeth? I mean, you know, it seems to me
that I've done this morning.
You'll always be in a committee meeting. Okay. So what are those committee meetings really like? I mean, do you go to the meetings? Do they do anything, or do they just walk around with the pads? I mean, how does it work?
Well, it really varies by committee. Some of the committees are well attended, some are barely attended and simply have proxy sheets that have been submitted.
Yeah, yeah.
I tend to be an activist member of committees. Although you'll be glad to hear that Cecilia Ketchik, who I first introduced to you
indeed
early on in her campaign,
you did. Yes.
Yeah, and then won her seat. She is a very activist committee member, and in fact, it has been joked about her that by the Republicans, quote, what is she, a Liz Krueger in training?
Uh-huh. LKT.
And we both laugh and take it as the highest compliment. But in fact, I question bills. I raise issues about bills. I raise issues about why Democratic bills aren't coming to the floor, why aren't they are moving through committee agendas, because in fact, there's a huge disproportion of Republican bills that move versus Democratic bills that move. IDC bills move when they want them to. But
now, we have to
Democratic
explain
bills
to the people listening one more time what the IDC is. Go ahead, Liz.
That's four people who broke off from the Democratic caucus and went into a coalition deal with the Republicans to allow the Republican minority to technically have a majority to keep control of the Senate, even though there were more Democrats elected by the people than Republicans. So we call it the Republican-led majority coalition because there were four Democrats who created their own third conference and caucus with them. And then there's actually another Democrat from Brooklyn, Simcha Felder, who ran as a Democrat and then before he even got here said, I'm going to the Republicans. So it's a little confusing, as usual, in my house. What are the sides? Why are people doing these things?
But yeah, well, let's stop right there, Liz, and say, let's concentrate on the why. There are those people who think it had to do with racial politics, that the Senate was leaders were black, and that people who were very ambitious, like Jeff Klein, saw his way blocked and decided if he did this separate conference of these sort of traitor Democrats, that he would have a better shot at leadership. Is that so?
I do think it has a great deal to do with Jeff Klein's desire to have leadership. I don't think I would define it as racial. I let other people make their judgment calls. Jeff was the deputy leader with Malcolm Smith the leader. At the time, the Democrats actually did take the majority and then had this horrendous coup situation. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, when everything fell apart and then the Democrats actually lost in the 2010 elections, I sort of see it as Jeff took his marbles and left because it didn't all work out the way he wanted it to. But I personally feel that when you're the leader and the deputy leader, to be pointing fingers at everybody else is an unfair argument. And then, of course, when the IDC was created, Malcolm Smith joined back with Jeff Klein in that group, and he was recently thrown out of the IDC when he was indicted.
Indicted for trying to bribe his way onto the mayoral. That's what the charge was.
One of the more bizarre indictment stories I think we've ever had up here in Albany, I would agree. But my point is, the two men who were running the Democratic caucus at the time where everything fell apart then stormed out saying it was everybody else's fault, and they had to work in another way. And to be honest, I would, at the time, was like, no, I have the right to be pissed and leave.
Sure.
Like, they don't have the right to be pissed and leave. I should be the one walking out. But I don't actually believe in doing that in government.
Well, okay, so let me get right down to Tachlis, as Senior Cuomo used to say, and ask you this. If Andrew Cuomo calls all the Democrats, now let's remind everybody, there are more Democrats than there are Republicans in the state Senate.
This is true.
And there are those of us, like me, who believe that Andrew Cuomo is the great architect who needed the Republicans to remain in power to keep the Democrats from passing uber progressive legislation that he worried about, because he was defining himself as a fiscal conservative. So he goes around. But if Andrew Cuomo wants to run for president and he goes into that convention, doesn't he have to tell people why he's been keeping the Republicans in power in his state?
I think he does, but I also think his argument is stronger if he can show his model actually got all the important legislation done. So I actually feel the challenge to Governor Cuomo right now is making sure the full women's equality agenda comes to the floor of the Senate for a vote.
Now, wait.
Campaign finance comes to the floor of the Senate for a vote, making sure consumer protection bills for families facing foreclosure come to the floor for a vote, because the IDC joined the Republicans saying this was a better way to get the progressive agenda done.
Yes.
And the governor appeared to endorse that concept. And so proof is in the pudding. We need to see whether these bills are coming to the floor, because I believe if they come to the floor, they will be voted yes. But Jeff Klein and Dean Skelos have a deal where they both have to sign off on a bill to come to the floor. So Andrew Cuomo needs to make sure Jeff Klein and Dean Skelos deliver these votes to the floor.
How will he do that?
Well, I think you have to ask Andrew Cuomo.
Well,
that,
I'll tell you.
My point is, okay, Andrea Stewart would bring these votes to the floor.
She's the Democratic, the regular Democratic leader.
She's the head of the Democratic Conference,
right.
The actual Democratic leader.
So now I know how he can do it.
Okay.
He calls all the Democrats, the Klein group, the breakaway group, otherwise known as the traitors, into a room with the regular Democrats and says, okay, now, parenthesis, I got to run for president here and I can't have this thing going on. And I'm going to insist that you people play nicely together and whatever you have to do, work it out and become the Democratic Conference. Now, he goes to Skelos, who is the Republican leader, and he says, Dean, unless you let the women's equality
agenda
come up, and unless you sanctify the abortion law, which you say you will not do, then I'm going to do what I just said. I'm going to bring all the Democrats together, and you're out. And it's the one thing. Now, he has to play poker with him because Andrew Cuomo's a tough guy to play poker with, I'm sure. And he has to say, okay, either you do it, or I'm going to do that, and you're out. And that's the one thing the Republicans don't want to do, which is to be out.
I think you are absolutely right, and clearly Republicans made this deal because it was the only way, since they didn't have the numbers, for them actually to stay, quote-unquote, in the visual majority and control of the legislative agenda. And so for them, everything is about keeping their majority, even though they don't have a majority. So.
They don't have a majority, but thanks to the governor. Remember, we should remind everybody that the governor ran for governor saying he was going to veto the very immoral, apportionment law, and he didn't do it.
And despite the fact that the Democratic Party was put at such, as you put it, immoral imbalance in attempting to win the majority, we actually did it.
Yes, Senator Krueger, but that was in a Democratic year. Obama was running, wildly popular in New York.
Yep.
So tell me, can you hold those seats that you won in the Obama year in an off year?
I believe we can, but it's going to be an enormous amount of work for every single Democrat in the state to help make sure we don't lose the gains we just made in 2012.
Well, what are some of the components of making sure? I mean, how hard
again,
is it work?
Yeah. We won Cecilia Katchik's seat, which was a hand-drawn seat for a Republican candidate, George Amador, right up here in the Albany region, five counties from part of or most of Ulster, half of Albany, Schenectady, Montgomery, Green. that literally was hand-drawn for the wealthy Republican opponent, except Cecilia was such an amazingly strong candidate that the people saw who she was and they voted for her. I believe that will be the story in 2014, but you're right, it's not a presidential year, it's a lower turnout year. It will be a hard fight that we will go in together as a group, and Cecilia will be victorious.
And you had another one, Gibson.
Terry Gibson, also was an amazingly talented, strong candidate, but it was, in fact, a three-way election last time. And so we are going to have to work very, very hard to make sure that Terry Gibson wins in 2014. You're absolutely right.
Okay, I got so many things to ask you.
Sure.
And the clock is ticking down, so take a minute on each of these, would you?
Okay.
I want to remind everybody we're talking to one of my favorite politicians who really cares, Senator Liz Krueger. Okay, Liz, the governor says that with the corruption allegations that we have seen, with people being indicted, with Lopez in the state assembly, who my students are calling Gropez, with all of that happening, he says it'll be easier to get his agenda, the very agenda you talked about before, through. Is he right?
I want him to be right when we talk about campaign finance reform and corruption reform and the women's equality agenda and. I don't know. I do think it's critical for people to understand that, in my opinion, the most important anti-corruption effort we could accomplish is shared matching low donor campaign finance.
Like they have in New York City.
Yes, like they have in New York City, or better than they have in New York City, because we've learned there are some flaws in the New York City system also. What I want to emphasize is, for all the indictments, you know, and they're disgusting, you know, the Gropez story, disgusting. People trying to, I don't know, buy their way onto party lines to run for mayor, which is sort of humorously absurd, stealing member item money yet again. You know, John Sampson's problems seem to be disproportionately not political corruption, personal financial behavior, but not political corruption. So don't let that get you off the topic that the biggest problem in this town is pay to play. It's all the things that are actually legal that go on every day that cost the state of New York billions of a year that completely corrupt the culture of Albany, where people pay to get bills written and passed, people pay to have bills stopped, all perfectly legally, and the fundamental concept of democracy and government focusing on the public interest, capital P, 19.5 million New Yorkers, doesn't get a fair shake in committee process, on the floor, in negotiations between the three men in the room. And it's not unique to the legislature. It is also the executive chamber. So we have to do campaign finance reform if anyone thinks we're actually going to change this town.
Well, will Dean Skelos, the Republican, the Republicans have more money, let's face it. Why would he go along with something like this?
Well, he has said he won't. So it goes back to your punchline of the governor bringing him into a room and explaining reality.
Yeah. Okay. You see Anthony Weiner running for mayor of New York. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, he announced, I guess, yesterday, and I'm up here in Albany. Anyone has the right to run. I will watch and see what the people in my district are prepared to forgive and forget. You know, for me, it was only 2 years ago, and what he did showed an incredibly poor sense of judgment, you know, at best, and a lot bigger problems at worst. I don't see him being a successful candidate for mayor. I actually don't think he should be running, but it's his right to choose to do so. You know, he's smart, he's interesting in ideas, but I don't think someone who had such a fatal set of character flaws documented to the world just 2 years ago
by himself
should be by himself. You know, and it was a self-destructive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we actually want to trust him to be the mayor of New York City.
Let's talk a little bit about casinos. Governor Cuomo said he wanted casinos upstate. This is part of his upstate push. Obviously, this is where he needs help and the rest of it. The speaker came along and said, nah, let's have some downstate also. What do you make of all of that?
You know, I always say I'm an agnostic on casinos and in gambling in general, because to be just against it is a little bit like the horse is out of the barn and you're saying you don't like horses.
Mm.
You know, gambling takes place all over the state, both legally, illegally. We have racinos with machines that basically are exactly the same games as casinos. My questions would be, how much revenue, real revenue, can the state get from expanding legal gambling? And when I say real revenue, I mean not having poor people in upstate New York take their rent money and give it to the casino so they don't have it for rent, but increased economic activity, and not, you know, $5 an hour jobs or $7 an hour jobs where you're creating yet another subclass of underpaid workers. But if there's real economic gain to be made by expanding casino gambling, and I have supported a proposal to have the casinos actually have to pay through their licensing fees for public financing of campaigns, because I keep getting told the Republican objection to public financing is not to use people's tax dollars. I'm like, okay, fine. We'll use the casino owners' dollars to pay for public financing, because, in fact, there has been corruption in other states involved with gambling. We all know that. And if we're inviting more of them in here to New York, let them pay for a fair democratic campaign system. You know, but the issue of upstate versus downstate, you know, the question for me is, where are we actually going to get new economic activity? I don't want to exploit poor upstate people by having them be the only ones who actually go and spend their money in casinos. But I know in New York City, people are flying into JFK Airport in Queens. They're getting on buses and being taken directly to Connecticut to their casinos, where they, as foreign tourists, they spend their money. They stay at the hotels, and they spend money in the restaurants and the shops. If you're going to fly into this country to gamble in to a New York City airport, my gut is, let you spend your money here in New York and let us keep it. Let Connecticut figure out their own issues.
Well, along the same lines, the governor has now proposed that we start giving tax breaks, full tax breaks, to people who want to go to a SUNY campus and who will set up shop at a SUNY campus. I have reservations about it. I wonder what you think.
I have huge reservations. My immediate reaction was, I need more details, but this feels like the next Empire Zone scandal 4 years down the road.
And remind us about that.
Okay, so we created a program, actually it was before I was in the legislature, called Empire Zone, where if you located your business in a specific geographic area, you got all kinds of tax deductions and tax exemptions. This program grew willy-nilly with no logic over the course of a number of years, where you could move the Empire Zone, you could redraw the line, so you get a bunch of businesses who came in here, but then you'd redefine the lines to be over there to add more businesses. And it got to the point where I actually said on the floor of the Senate, let's just make the whole bloody state an Empire Zone. What do we think we're doing? Because you were creating this range war between whether businesses would stay or move or even redefine their corporate name so that they appeared to be a new business in a tax-reduced zone. When I heard the governor's announcement yesterday, I thought, oh, is this going to be the same thing? It's not going to create new jobs. Everybody's going to move their locations. And then I learned it's not just SUNY campuses. It's, I guess, within some radius of SUNY campuses. And I could see a year from now somebody putting out a bill arguing, we should make the zone larger, than somebody else putting out a bill going, so wait, if you're a new business in New York State, you get to be written off of taxes, but an old business who's trying to keep jobs alive gets no help, and then there'll be a proposal to expand. And again, for me, when you're dealing with business taxes, I believe an even playing field is the most important thing we can do in the state. We should try to keep our taxes as low as possible, recognizing there are real needs for government costs and that businesses design where they go and where they stay based on infrastructure and a workforce that can do the jobs they need doing, and only way down the list their tax level. And so we should not jump to willy-nilly do away with business and corporate taxes. And again, I am very uncomfortable with special deals for special sub-entities, particularly based on geographic lines. I think there are all kinds of problems written into this proposal.
To say nothing, and we're really running out of time here, but to say nothing of the fact that universities were established as sort of pure forms, hopefully, that would look at what knowledge is. And now we see this impingement on universities, you know, by business. Now, there's something to be said for, because kids need jobs when they graduate. There's no question about it. But the question is, when is the tail wagging the dog?
I disagree slightly with you. I think there can be incredible value in public-private partnerships between educational facilities and businesses, i.e. expansion of research and development. If you're a student who wants to go into any of the scientific endeavors, what better part of your
sure.
education than to be involved in real-world research?
No, we don't disagree. Yeah.
But, if New York State is paying for half the cost of R&D for private businesses and perhaps paying for their buildings and perhaps giving them tax-free options, and they are successful with their patents and create something amazing that makes them a fortune, don't you think the people of New York State should be shareholders in that? We
yes.
paid for it. We should get the return. And those deals never work out that way.
Yes, I think they should. And I know the New Yorkers get really ticked off when they read that a major corporation paid no taxes last year.
Yep.
So that makes them unhappy. I want to ask you about something that is one of my favorite names in all of politics. We only have a minute for it, and that is Wilson Pakula. If you want to run in somebody else's party, you have to ask permission of those guys. That's what got some politicians into trouble here,
right.
Malcolm Smith. So are you for doing away with the Wilson Pakula rule and let everybody run anytime they want to?
You know what? I'm torn because what the Wilson Pakula rule really allows is for smaller, minor parties to have a role in New York State politics, right? And I respect the concept of third parties, smaller parties, being able to be active participants in a democratic model that seems sort of set up for only the two major parties. I don't want to see a system where you buy yourself onto a line. I mean, you just mentioned Malcolm Smith, but who's the king of this? Michael Bloomberg, right? He bought himself lines so that he could run and win for mayor. And yet nobody said it was illegal or that it was corrupting the process because he put his money through a campaign committee versus a much smaller amount of money in an envelope being handed off to a couple of people at restaurants. So the question is, what is the issue about whether New Yorkers think having third-party options is reasonable? Not so much the detail of Wilson Pakula. Would I prefer to have the members of parties actually be able to make the decisions for their party versus the bosses of any party make the decisions? Yes. So I think there ought to be a way to respect the right of third parties to say, we want to have influence, we want to be players. It's not realistic for us to imagine running a freestanding candidate to be a mayor or a governor or attorney general, but we want to be players and have impact on that process. So I would like us to come up with a system that recognizes and respects third parties and their role in our political process. And if people really think there's a fundamental flaw in Wilson Pakula, I bet there's a way to come up with a quote-unquote more small-d democratic process to ensure that without transfer of money to buy lines, the people within a party can have a say about if their candidate also happens to be a Democrat or a Republican.
Okay, Liz Krueger, we are out of time. The New York State Senator Liz Krueger, if there is some person in the state legislature with conscience who leads the way in terms of ethics, it's Liz Krueger. Liz, always delightful for you to spend time with us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.